Welcome to Cabronas y Chingonas, a podcast where we talk about queer and Latinx topics such as...
Have you seen J-Lo and Hustlers? Okay, I haven't seen it, right? But I'm fully endorsing the fact that she should have been gay. Just because I love J-Lo and there's a lot of beautiful women in this movie that I have not seen yet. But I'm fully, fully endorsing. So, J-Lo, you should have been gay in this movie. I just know it.
What if she is and we just don't know yet because we haven't seen it?
I mean, that would be the best kind of surprise to go into. So I'm really excited to see this movie eventually, which by now I hopefully have seen it.
Yeah, I'm just trying to figure out who I would ship her with. Like, not Cardi B.
Constance Wu.
No.
Yes, dude. There's a picture of, like, Jennifer Lopez's thigh right next to, like, Constance Wu's face.
Sold. Okay, what up, cabrona?
What's poppin', chingona? What's goody? Happy Latinx Heritage Month. I'm gonna call it that. Fuck Hispanic Heritage Month.
Yeah, that's fine. The Twitter hashtag acknowledges both of them, I found out today.
Really? Shout out to Twitter for being, you know, some things they do right, most of the things they do wrong, but shout out to them.
Exactly. We already have today, I've already looked, but we will probably be getting in a few new listeners because iTunes put us on their Latinx Heritage Month, which really they call it Hispanic Heritage Month, but like their featured list, which happened to us last year. So I'm excited that we're on it again this year.
It's super dope.
Next to like the most amazing people, like fucking Bodega Boys are on
right
there. We're right next to Locatora Radio.
That's an honor.
And of course, Latinos Who Lunch is there.
Of course.
A bunch of really great podcasts.
Shout out to that Oprah article.
Yeah.
Shout out to the comments section of that Oprah article. But yeah, no, it's pretty cool being mentioned beside all those really dope people. They forgot some people, but it's cool.
They did.
That we love.
I mean, Spotify forgot us, so.
I mean... Apple showed love, so shout out to Apple.
Yeah.
That's why I'm gonna keep buying your products, Apple. But yeah, so it's really cool. Shout out to Central America. They don't get no love this month. People forget. So shout out to all Central America right now, and shout out to y'all and y'all's
your own independence.
Yeah, like everyone's getting their independence this month, so it's pretty cool. And I mean, I wonder how, like, different people celebrate. Like, I didn't really celebrate. I just stayed up all night last night watching, like, Univision and, like, waiting for, like, El Grito. But, like, I didn't even see it. So, it was weird. I think it was, like...
I've never done anything ever to celebrate it in my life. Like, nothing. I've
Fuck
never
nationalism.
Celebrated it. Like, not even on purpose. Like, I just never have. Like, the first time that I kind of celebrated was us just getting on iTunes last year. That's pretty much it.
That was... That's how you celebrated. I mean, I've never done anything either. Like, my parents are like super like, oh, it's like Independence Day in Mexico. Cool. Right on. That's it. Like, we don't celebrate anything. And I wonder if other people do. I saw a lot of other people like going out and doing shit. Except I don't go out on Sundays. It's like, y'all wildin'. Y'all real crazy. I gotta wake up at 6:30. So y'all wildin' for that shit. But yeah. Shout out to everybody that went out and did something and is gonna continue to celebrate this month. And I don't know. Does it have any significance to you at all?
No.
Like, hey, just keeping it real, right? Like,
I mean, I don't know. Maybe I just never felt connected. I never did anything to it. I mean, I would have to, like, get into it and learn about it and force myself to get into it, which feels inauthentic, but I'll do it.
I mean, no, I mean, I get you because, like, in school, like, you're not taught your own history. You're not taught your history in school. You're not taught your history until... I didn't learn anything until, like, what, college? I took a Chicano Lit class. Shout out to that Chicano Lit class at UNT. I think it's the only one. But, yeah, up until then, like, I had... It was just another day, dude. Like, I don't know. I've never felt connected to that day either, so... Yeah, or this whole month, like, I went to not majority Latinx school, so I didn't know what that was like.
I did go to a majority Latinx school. I mean, I did, but I didn't, because I never really went to school. But anyways.
Okay.
Besides the point.
Ms. Truitt
has always just been this is just the beginning of spoopy season for me. Spoopy season. Halloween is my shit. And we'll do an episode on that later, like, again, because Halloween is my shit. Since we're getting all these, hopefully getting all these new listeners, we should probably just quickly reintroduce who the fuck we are and all that shit.
I'm Fried Papita. I usually review movies, but I mean, it's whatever. I'm from Texas. I don't know. This is awkward for me. You go, Maita.
You should also mention you're the cabrona of the Cabronas y Chingonas.
Correct. Yes, I'm the cabrona.
You're also Concha Gang.
Concha Gang Gang. I just can't drink coffee. I'm just allergic. So, you know, I miss out on the caffeine that y'all get in the mornings. Bro, I drank coffee like one time and I saw into the future. Like, it was a That's So Raven moment. Like, my eyes expanded and I saw the future and I was like, oh, I can do everything. Everything is me. And yeah, I never drank coffee again. I got immediately sick and I regretted every tiny sip I took. And yeah, never again. What about you, Maita?
I feel that. I'm Maita. I am also from Texas. I live in Los Angeles now. So we record long distance, in case you guys didn't know. And most of the time, not always, but most of the time. And I'm Cafecito Gang. I love coffee. I have it every single day. And if I don't, I get a headache. And I'm Cafecito Gang. We have shirts and stuff on Teespring.
Buy our merch.
On our CY, on CYC Podcast Instagram bio, it's on there. And you can also, we also post about it every now and then, so you can see the styles on our social media as well.
Yeah, support two brown queer folk doing some shit, y'all. This is all self-made, self-produced. Maita edits all this shit and puts it out. I am here. And I'm getting...
And we, you'll probably know by now, but we talk about queer and Latinx representation and representation of people of color of all sorts. And
or the lack thereof.
Yes.
Lots of lack.
Exactly. Speaking of the lack thereof... Let me tell you a little bit about something that I watched.
Oh, God. Here it comes, y'all. Here it comes. I want to hear about this.
I'm going to tell you about this new Netflix original movie called Tall Girl.
Ooh.
In the style
what could it be
of
about?
Stefan. But I'm going to tell you about it in the style of Stefan from SNL, like Week of the Weekend update, you know, with Bill Hader back in the day. Okay. This film has everything. Casual fatphobic comments, a focus on white characters at a school in New Orleans, a two-dimensional black girl as a weak supporting character, and a predictable ending. It has everything.
Oh, God. How many shrugs are you giving this?
Oh, my God. It was, honestly, I didn't have trouble watching it.
What?
Which, because it was, like, the first half had, like, some, like, stupid funny moments where I was able to just kind of like laugh at that, and the second half was just like so bad, and I was like, I was busy, I was doing stuff while I was watching it, I wasn't just like attentively watching it, but God, it got worse, I'll tell you that much.
Ugh.
It got worse. And
for y'all that don't know, this is the the white girl press show on Netflix, right? Is it a show or a movie?
It's a movie.
Oh, God. It's the white girl who's oppressed movie. Her oppression is that, guess what, guys? She's a tall, cis, white girl. That's it. That's her oppression. Wow.
Super tall.
Super tall.
And
she could be a model. She's obviously in a movie, so she's so oppressed, you guys.
Yeah. It's But anyways, cringe. I also have been watching better things, like Schitt's Creek Season 5, which was, like... I watched all of the show before, but I hadn't watched the latest season. And I see why the latest season made it, like, come into, I guess, the media a lot more. Because it was a really good fifth season. And anybody that's gay, even though the show is really, really white, anybody that's gay will be able to watch this season and, like, probably cry a lot. From happiness, because this is a comedy.
Oh, okay. Like, I ain't ready for them sad tears now.
No. Super sad. Happy tears.
Super
very cathartic.
Happy tears.
Very sweet. It's I love it. It's so
what?
Good.
Free therapy?
Mm-hmm.
Queer happy tears? What a concept.
Exactly.
That's crazy. What else? Let's see. What else have we been watching? Oh, my God. Steven Universe, the movie, came out. And wow. That's... It was an interesting, cute little movie, and I need my dose of happiness, you know? It's like a lot of people feel this way about The Good Place, That's how I feel about Steven Universe. It's just a kid's cartoon show about love and understanding, yet somehow it's not corny, and somehow I'm a 28-year-old watching it, and I don't feel like I'm being pandered to. I don't feel like it's pandering to children either. It's just, it's extremely well done. I wouldn't even classify it an anime. It comes on Cartoon Network. The episode's usually only 15 minutes long. Y'all need to get your life and get your free therapy and start being a better person, you know? Like, there's just so many lessons I've learned from Steven Universe. Like, I'm not exaggerating. Like, it's one of the few shows that makes me, like, actually cry. Like, real tears. So, and you know why? Because Rebecca Sugar is a Cancer, and she's like speaking directly to my like Capricorn. Like, all my earth signs are just like, wow, I need this. Like, I have no water in my inner chart. Anyways, that was a really gay sentence. But yeah, if you like are emotionally repressed, watching Steven Universe is probably gonna like save your life and save all your relationships with other human beings. So
I've been five bonuses finally
all the time.
Finally been catching up on that show. I haven't finished the latest season, but I want to finish it before I watch the movie, so I've been running through those episodes.
The season finale for this last season, like, I bawled. Like, I'm not exaggerating. Like, there's when Peridot and Lapis fought, and you're not there yet? You're not there
no,
yet?
No, I am, but, like, what if other people aren't? I wasn't a week ago.
Oh. That's all I'm gonna say. The barn scene, I cry to this day. If I'm like feeling emotionally blocked, I'll just watch the barn episode and like I'm back to being a regular human being with feelings. But yeah, you guys should watch it. It's on Cartoon Network and it'll save your life, honestly.
Yeah. I feel really fortunate to have the friends that I have that always give me their logins, including you.
Mm-hmm. And, you're welcome.
And one of my homies, Drew, who I don't think listens to this because I told him that I bash white people a lot on it. And but he gave me like his he gave me YouTube TV, basically. What? A login, which is basically cable. So I've been watching anything I fucking want, and I'm really appreciative of that.
You're welcome. You're welcome. I got you.
It's dope. All right. So the complete opposite of Tall Girl is what we're gonna be talking about today.
Oh yeah, complete fucking opposite, about actual things that need to be represented. Exactly. Things that have never been ignored
and not whining about being marginalized.
No, just taking an active step forward to be brought into the like spotlight. And it's, for me, it's a movie I've been trying to watch since I was like, for like 8 years now. I've heard about this movie, maybe longer, maybe 10 yeah. years. I've been trying to watch this movie and I couldn't find it anywhere. And it's, that just goes back to, you know, access. It goes back to privilege. It goes back to who made this and why and who's this for and, like, who's getting excluded from the actual, like, spotlight. So it was a lot to think about. It was pretty heavy, honestly. But it was beautiful to me because I understood it. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, kind of the same about both of the films that we're talking about. They're both films that are deemed classics. Yes. And they're also... not the easiest to find. Recently, I think they were both remastered by like the UCLA like project, because they're old. They're from the 90s. But I'm excited. What year did Watermelon Woman come out?
Yeah, so I'm gonna be covering Watermelon Woman. It came out in 1996.
Okay, all right. Yeah. So we what usually about... go chronological.
Okay.
Do you want to do that this time?
When did yours come out? When did your movie
94.
Come out? 94.
Yeah.
I'm down because I've always wanted to watch that movie too, and I've just never been able to get like find it.
For sure, which is actually right now, it's free to watch on Vudu. So if you have Vudu, you can watch it for free.
Okay, that's all you had to say. I've been trying to watch this movie for as long as I've been trying to watch Watermelon Woman, so I'm excited. Yo. That's,
yeah, definitely go catch it, and soon, because you never know, this shit could drop off of Vudu any day.
Y'all need to watch this shit soon. Y'all don't understand, like, this is revolutionary shit. Shit they were making in the 90s wasn't for, like, commercial consumption. That shit was, like, art. The shit was, like, documentary style, like, let's tell our stories. It was so punk rock back then because no one was telling any kind of story at all. It was just them, these group of weirdos making badass shit for us that, you know, I'm just super grateful to my queer elders for that. It was dope.
Exactly. So, okay, so Go Fish came out in 1994, It was originally released at Sundance, and that year at Sundance, it was the first film to be sold. And it got sold for $450,000
In 94?
in 94, and they spent maybe $15,000 on it. And then it went on,
Damn.
yeah, and then it went on to make 2.4 million.
What the fuck?
Dude, and this is not a Hollywood movie like you're saying.
Hell no.
I mean, you guys will learn that really quick. It was cheap because of like the creators. So it starred Genevieve Turner. I think that's how you say her name,
Guinevere.
Guinevere Turner, and she co-wrote the film with Rose, I believe it's Troche, and she directed it. Rose did, and it took her like 3 years to finish this thing because it was a labor of love, and it was her baby. There wasn't any big names in it. Like if you go on their IMDb, like to this day, they're really the only ones with a bunch of credits. I think Guinevere is probably the only one that really got a crazy career out of it. And then Rose ended up producing and directing on the L Word, and Guinevere was in the L Word. And so yeah, but basically, this movie like proved during its time that lesbian themes were marketable. Like it was kind of a really, really big deal because 2.4 million, like that wasn't nothing, especially back then. And it was shot in black and white, and it was supposed to be this very artsy, like guerrilla style, like type of filmmaking. It wasn't like I said, not Hollywood at all. And it's also the other thing that's really special about Go Fish. Back then, this is still something that we fight for today. This is why we have this podcast. But especially back then, like it can be seen pretty much as like a simple love story because it wasn't about being gay for once. It was about people who happen to be gay, living their gay lives, whatever that happened to be. Like, and that was revolutionary to something as simple as that it just wasn't about the act of being gay, which,
Concept.
yeah, exactly. It was one of the first ones and it set a precedent, which is dope, which is why it's so revered today. So, getting into the actual story. So, for Max, who is Turner, she's a main character. I don't feel like a lot happens for her in the story. Basically, the concept of her story is she hasn't gotten laid in 10 months, and she would really like to get laid. That's
We
pretty
would
much
like for her to
this.
get laid, yeah.
No, she like everyone wants her to get laid. Yeah, so the film itself opens up with a lecture from Kia. So Kia is her roommate, who is this black butch lesbian and a college professor.
Yes.
And she asked the people in her class to name all the lesbians that they kind of know, like famous lesbians. And there are some like serious names that are thrown out there, like Virginia Woolf, and others that are a lot less credible, like Chelsea Clinton. And
Oh shit.
yeah, and they kind of do what we do at the top of all of our episodes, which is talk about why we think someone, whether fictional or otherwise, is gay or queer. At the end of that little conversation, she goes on to point out that, like, at the time, there was very little documentation of the lives of lesbians or their relationships, and there was barely any on paper and virtually none on film. So eventually,
Damn.
she says a very quotable line, which is that by understanding the power of having a history, you begin to want to change history. So that's,
Ooh, okay,
yeah,
that's a bar.
it is.
Okay.
It's really important and really interesting that they put that at the top of the film because it doesn't have a whole lot to do with the plot line of the story, but it definitely is very telling about what the film does for media in the grand scheme of things. So I love that opening shot in its entirety. So that's when you actually move on to find out a little bit about Max, who is the main character. And so basically there's a backdrop, like scenes, several different scenes of a bunch of different lesbians, that you're gonna learn more about throughout the film. And Max is kind of like narrating. She has a voiceover and she's telling the audience about like how she fantasized she has like a fantasy where she was supposed to have met the love of her life on the bus one day, but she accidentally missed it because like the circumstances were wrong and the love of her life didn't get on that bus, and she was like looking at her from outside the bus and she was like, oh, that was gonna be the one. And then she kind of like continues this crazy fictional story in her head about a woman that she never met. And I felt like that was really relatable because sometimes I make up like a whole life in my head, and like even in my brain it doesn't go well. Like usually like something fucks it up. Yeah, so that's kind of what happens in her story, like that she's like has this fantasy, like that's how single she is, you know.
Dude, I feel like lesbians are like the last romantics. Like I feel like lesbians are the most fucking romantic people on earth, and they just
you'd be onto something there. You might want to talk
to Babelito on that. Fucking romantics left. I honestly think it. I don't think straight culture is really promoting like I'm gonna meet someone and fall in love like right now today. Like, right. Lesbians, bro.
Interesting. But anyway, back to Kia for a minute. Her roommate. Mm-hmm. She's dating a Latina named Evie, who towards the beginning of the film we see her on the phone making up a story about why she didn't come home to her probably really overbearing mom. And even though she's grown, like she's grown as hell, they're all grown.
That's real.
Yes, exactly. So I'll go into Evie a little bit more later, but basically Max asks Kia to look over her some paper that she did, and they go and meet up at like the gayest cafe that they know apparently, and they run into this woman named Ellie, or no, Eli, she pronounces it Eli, and Max, like, not to her face, but like she super rudely like calls Ellie ugly, cause she's older, and like I guess she like, it's hard to tell in this movie because like no one really looks very fashionable, but the implication is that she's less fashionable than the rest of the lesbians in this film. They all look kind of wild to me, but
yeah, whatever. Lesbian style in the 90s is not what that is.
it was interesting.
Yeah, that's a word.
so she literally like calls her ugly, and like Kia gets really upset about it because she's trying to recommend like women in the cafe that she should date, but you know, obviously Max is being super picky. But this is one of those situations where the universe keeps pushing them together, and by the universe I mean other lesbians.
That's the universe, right?
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Love it.
So Max's growth is mainly shown like through her getting over her shallowness and like kind of like seeing the person behind the fashion sense, to kind of like put it plainly. Eli's story, however, is about getting out of her rut and not being afraid of change. It's really interesting to see her physical change, like what she, you know, like changes her hairstyle too and all this stuff, and like how she deals with it.
Is it like a gay awakening where you like you cut your hair and you start dressing really different?
Kind of, yeah. I would say that she probably was repressed, you know, like wasn't trying to look a certain way. Okay. But she wasn't closeted or anything. That's what's kind of cool about like what I mentioned earlier. This movie is not, none of it's about like denying your gayness. It's more like, you know, denying the intricacies within it. I don't know. But okay. they end up having like a number of obstacles in the way. I'm not going to disclose what those obstacles are in case you guys want to watch it spoiler-free. So all I'll say is that Max's story begins with wanting to get laid, like, and so it's not hard to see, like, what the payoff of the story might be, you know? Anyways, but I do want to talk a little bit about Evie, who I mentioned before, the Latina. Mm-hmm. She, later in the movie, they have a scene where she goes home, and her mom and her ex-boyfriend are there in this kitchen, and she finds out that she's been outed by him to her mom, and I don't know like why he's still hanging out at her place if he's her ex, but he's just like one of those bums that is always trying to scam on people probably. Okay. I don't know, but she basically gets kicked out of her house. The reason that I want to mention this scene is because it's one of the most authentic ones that I recognize in the film, strangely enough, because whoever workshopped this dialogue, they knew what a real mother-daughter relationship could be like between Latinas, and like the kind of specific words that the mom would use to guilt her daughter, like using religion and like all these other things. And they spoke in Spanish, and it wasn't subtitled in English, it was subtitled in Spanish.
So, oh shit.
Yeah, so whoever did just that scene, like, they knew what the fuck they were doing. So I was really, it honestly stood out a lot, not just because I related to it, but because it was very different from the rest of the film. It was the only one where you really saw like conflict about being queer. And I guess if they had completely left that out of the stories, it wouldn't be super authentic anyways, right? Oh. Anyways, other things worth noting about Go Fish are some of the offhand conversations that go on between like the lesbians in this film. There's a lot of lesbians in this film, like so many. And
more than two, it's a lot, right?
No, like there's so many, like you have no idea, like I lost track. A lot of them look alike.
That's a good thing.
Yeah. So there's this really lengthy scene. Some of people like described it as like Kafka-esque, I don't know. But okay. Where basically a group of lesbians talk about the stigma against lesbians who sleep with men. And there's a whole conversation about like what constitutes being a lesbian. And there's a conversation, there's also conversations around like butchness and gender expression. And okay. Like what that means, because in that particular period, people are dressing super butch, but it's because of the style that was popular and not as much as like,
oh, like that Aaliyah look, right?
I guess so.
Yeah, like how Lee used to wear like boxers and like baggy shirts and like baggy pants and stuff.
Like a lot of the 90s. A lot of short hairstyles, a mm-hmm. lot of like backwards caps and really big shirts. Yeah, that was like the style, and it just kind of happened to align with the butch values. I don't know. And for so, I don't know. What I like about this movie, quite honestly, it feels really, really fresh. Like it's old, like almost as old as I am. And it's kind of like Watermelon Woman in that it has that artsy guerrilla style of filmmaking. Mm-hmm. Like it's not trying to be like, it doesn't care when it takes you out of the story because of the weird shots that it takes. So it's, I don't know. I think I can see why those two films get categorized together sometimes. You might see them side by side in the Google, and there's a reason for that. They have a very similar filmmaking style. So I just gotta say, it's totally worth watching. I avoided it for a long time too, because I don't like watching stuff that's super old. But this is one that like does not age badly. It's also like, it doesn't, it's in its content and in its politics, didn't age badly either, you know?
Like, you find that in most queer like film.
Yeah, well, they're surprisingly progressive.
Lesbian movies, at least from the 90s. That shit ages okay.
They talk about monogamy. I'm like, I started talking about monogamy like a year ago.
They were onto something. Let women get together and just do some shit, you know?
Yes, they were. And like talking about conversations about like what they want the overall image of lesbians to be like. Do you want it to be this like prudish nerd, or do you want it to be like this over sexualized person that at least has control over her own sexuality, you know? Like they had all these conversations.
Okay, but what's your hot take on that? What do you think it should be?
I don't think that it should be, period. Oh. I don't think there should be a singular image for,
there should be no standard. It's just be,
yeah, basically like respect the person. I don't know.
That's cool.
That's my hot take. So yeah, it's on Vudu. Vudu for free watching currently. And I would say no cafecitos. And it's not like, oh, this is my favorite film forever. Like, but I just really like, I can really respect and appreciate what it did for every movie probably that we've covered about lesbians since then.
Period. Yeah.
Yes. Like that's this. Amazing. This is a great starting point, as was Watermelon Woman, of course. And I, in fact, the reason that I covered this movie, because I was watching Watermelon Woman and they mentioned Go Fish at the top of the film.
Ah, look at you. Inside references.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I really want to see Go Fish, so I'm going to hit up Vudu, because, again, I've been trying to watch Go Fish for the longest. I couldn't find it fucking anywhere for, like, years. Of course, I found it on YouTube, like, a long time ago, and I could never get the whole thing.
Damn.
I know, dude. Following in the theme. Oh my god, Watermelon Woman kind of stands for literally everything we do. After watching it, I was like, this is the thing I've wanted probably my whole life. I don't know. Other than like Mosquita and Mari, like, I feel like this is the movie that closely identifies to what we do in this podcast, what we do in all of our spare time, what we do, what we obsess about is the same thing that Cheryl Dunier was obsessing about too back in 1996. So Watermelon Woman is about Cheryl. She works at a movie rental store in Philadelphia. I like that it's not New York. I like that it's not LA. I like that it's Philly. She's an aspiring filmmaker. I say aspiring because she hasn't quite made her film yet. She's in the process of it, and that's what she tells everybody. And she watches this old black and white movie from like 1920, and she becomes obsessed with, for lack of a better word, a black mammy who is only, her only identifier is that she's called the Watermelon Woman. And for those of you who don't know what the black mammy is, if we're going to take it back, let's take it all the way back. She's going to be an older, desexualized black woman who's shown and depicted in all, like, black and white racist film. Anything in Hollywood before, like, 1940, that would be a mammy. She was the one usually working inside the house. She was the woman that was there to protect and defend her white people. She was, like, a housekeeper. She was obedient. She was there as a supporting role to all the Karens of the 1920s. The most famous
and super quick to add on to the description, what made her desexualized allegedly was that she was always depicted as a bigger woman or like a curvy woman, which was fucked in a number, so that's a little like a layered fuckedness.
Super layer. And the most famous black mammy that we know and everyone knows is Hattie McDaniel, who played that in Gone with the Wind. She won a best supporting Oscar role off of playing a black mammy. And the only thing that I thought was really interesting about that and why I'm going to go on this tangent now is because when you look at like the Academy Awards, when you look at black women being even nominated and winning Oscars, they seem to always win it when they're best supporting actresses and not as lead actresses. Halle Berry was the only one. You know, Hattie McDaniel, Whoopi Goldberg was, I think, nominated. I think Regina King recently won. Viola Davis recently won. Lupita Nyong'o, Octavia Spencer, Monique, Jennifer Hudson, Whoopi. Like, come on, guys. Like, these are all the only black women that get to win Oscars are when they're best supporting actresses. And I think that's a theme that's super fucking common with America, with what we're allowing black women to do. And not by we, I mean like literally white folk, not me, but all white folk, American people in the Oscars have only let black women win for best supporting actresses. And that's insane to me when you look at the history of it. And have you ever seen some Latinos up there except our one and only, our true love, Rita Moreno? Like, have we seen anyone else?
Yeah, no. I mean, it was shit. Like, we recently had Yalitza, who, quite honestly, at your description earlier, like, she came to mind as, like,
Hattie McDaniel.
As a black mammy type. Yeah,
she's a, like, black mammy type. Exactly. And what was she nominated for? Like, come on.
I think she was nominated for, like,
at least, was it best actress in a lead role?
Because she wasn't supporting.
She wasn't supporting. She was the whole movie. She carried that movie with just her fucking eyes. But it really makes you think about, like, who's been allowed and who's been nominated for what? And why are black women only seen as best supporting? Why the fuck aren't they just being the, like, leads? Why can't they win for just being leads? Viola Davis is not a lead? Get the fuck out of here. Don't talk to me. That's disrespect. Like, we gonna fight. Regina King in her own right. Like, fuck all y'all. I'm very passionate about this, and fuck that. But, okay, back to the subject. Anyway, Cheryl Dunier becomes obsessed with the Watermelon Woman, and the movie is her journey into doing all this research and to find who was this woman, who was she representing, because what she saw in the Watermelon Woman wasn't just like another black woman. What she was reading and what other queer people do all the time is we know a queer when we see one. We're like, oh, you ain't straight though. And so she saw this Watermelon Woman and felt connected to her in a way that she wasn't regularly connected to all black women in film, because black cinema was a huge thing. And that's another thing this movie talks about, and it gets completely ignored. And I thought what was really interesting is all the places where Cheryl's character goes to learn more about this character, the Watermelon Woman. She finds out her name is Faye. What's her last name? Faye Richards. She finds out her name is Faye Richards. And she finds out that she was romantically linked to the director of that movie. And her name was Margaret Page. She was like a butch white director. A butch white director directing a movie in like 1920, 1930? That's insane. It was a silent film. Well, was it violent? No, it wasn't silent. My bad.
No, I think it started off silent. I don't know, man. I forgot.
There were other silent films, of course, that she was in. But, oh, fun thing. This is the first movie that's directed by a black lesbian. Lesbian. Period. Period. Oh, okay. Bro. 1996. This was the first movie. A butch. And not just the butch. A black lesbian is making a fucking movie, and she's the lead. And it's about, guess what? Other black queer women. And that's never existed before her. And I thought that was, like, absolutely fucking insane and sad. It was sad. It was really fucking sad. And she actually won Best Feature at Outfest. She won awards. She even got noticed by this like Republican congressman, Peter Hagstra, I believe. He went on this whole fucking rant about how like the National Endowment of the Arts shouldn't give money out to, like, degenerates, you know? Like,
oh, my God.
He went on, like, national fucking news. He went to, like, the board and everybody. And now the National Endowment of Arts no longer exists because of Trump, right? Him and his little friends took that shit away. But it was because of the government that she was able to make this movie. They gave her this money. And they said, make your fucking film. So shout out to her for being, like, not just a badass bitch, for being infamous, too. Like, Icon, Cheryl Dunier, like, you don't know what we owe to you.
If you're not pissing people off, probably not.
Are you really making critical art? Like,
exactly.
You're not. Are you really
challenging the norm? Like, yeah.
She's challenged all the fucking norms. She said, this dude was so pissed off. He's like, oh, I would never recommend this to my friends. White dudes. I would never recommend this to my family. Racist white people. Sexist, homophobic motherfuckers. This whole movie is like highlighting all of it. On top of this plot of Cheryl Dunier finding the history of this amazing black woman who got silenced, which is what we do obsessively in our free time as well. There's this subplot of her hooking up with a white girl. And this white girl is famously Guinevere Turner. the fun thing about the subplot is that, like, I feel like so many things about race and class have not changed in, what, 20-some years? Since 1996 to 2019, a lot of these conversations that Cheryl is having with her friend Tamara at dinner when they're talking about this white girl have not changed. I feel like a lot of the animosity, a lot of the stigma against it is still there. It's still very real. But in this movie, what you're finding is that usually people are like, oh, you can just love who you want to love. But this movie actually outlines how complicated that really is there's so many things separating you. You know, you're like, you're black, you're from a completely different class. Here's this white girl who's actually just fetishizing me. Because, like, her character, this white girl, who I don't remember because in the style of me, white people characters, I don't remember their actual names, their character names. Fuck that. She has a history of only dating black folk.
And Diana.
Diana. Okay. All right, Diana. She has a history of only dating black people her entire life. So I thought it was interesting to throw in a fetishization of black folk and black humans in 1996 in a movie about like queer black representation in Hollywood. Like, what is this? I thought it was amazing, that little subplot in there. And they weren't scared to show you sex. Like, they were like, here's a sex scene, have it, enjoy it, be it. And I was shocked at that.
Get all up in it.
Get all up in the sex scene. But yeah, don't watch this with your family, folks. Like, just, you know, fast forward a lot of scenes. I mean, unless your mom's like a radical ass, you know, baddie. I wouldn't watch this with my mom. Love her, but I wouldn't watch this with her. okay, back to the main plot. And the most interesting things that Cheryl is doing and highlighting in this film is that she speaks with a professor, a white woman professor who specialized, you give me that look, in African-American studies. Now, what the fuck does that mean? It means exactly what you think it means. She's interviewing the Karen, the most Karenist Karen on this fucking movie. And this woman is defending racism. This woman is defending slavery, talking about, well, you know, black people eating watermelon isn't a stereotype. It's a symbol of joy and hope. And all of us are sitting there the exact same way everyone else is. And we're just like, is this bitch really defending slavery right now? We're going to box this PhD woman. Like, I don't care if you're a professor. We're going to fight. There was nothing in what you said that was like, this is exactly why we need more black women just talking to other black
women. It definitely was uncomfortable. Like, I think that's what I remember. Like, I think she was trying to make a point about, like, oh, why do we have to make, like, watermelon such a negative symbol? It shouldn't, you know, it was made a negative symbol because of this and that. Like, she's so close, but it's, like, because she's white, like, and the way that she frames things, it makes you very uncomfortable with the way, I don't know. I feel like she almost redeems herself at the end of the conversation, but not quite.
No,
it's kind of weird.
She doesn't, because it was just so off base, everything this white woman says. And she's going here to get research. She wants to know about black career women in cinema in Hollywood, and she's not finding anything. And that's why she goes to this professor, and this professor instead tells her, oh, I know who Margaret Page is, I know who the white woman is, but why would I know who this black person is in the movie? She's not important. And for us, like, me and you, like, anyone, people of color, like, we're not going to see ourselves in a director. We're going to see ourselves in the watermelon woman. That's closer to who we've always been than that fucking director and who she stood for. So I thought that was insane, because it's what we've been doing, is we've been so thirsty for representation that the B characters are our favorite characters, because that's where we finally see ourselves represented, not the white leads. It's just not there for us. And on top of her just going to professor, she not only goes to a white academic space, she goes to a queer volunteer space, and all the same thing. She finds nothing. She finds pictures. She gets a little bit closer. But even that community is closed off and not as welcoming as you thought it would be. Why? I see a lot of white queers there, a lot of white lesbians running that space. I didn't see any black people other than her. And she was seen as a visitor. She was still seen as an outsider in what was supposed to be her own community. So I thought that was fucking crazy. And then from there, she goes to a black queer man, so who is a cinephile of black Hollywood. And yet even he doesn't know who this black queer woman is. Why would he? He doesn't specialize in black queer women. He specializes in, you know, the directors, the main actresses, but not, why would he center in this small queer woman? That's not his focus either. So again, we're exploring another space where a black woman still isn't, she's still being othered in what is supposed to also be her own community, the black queer community, but it was still black male. So she didn't see herself there either. Where was she supposed to find herself? And in the end, what you find is that Cheryl's place where she belongs is among other black queer lesbians. And I think that's what this movie is centering. I think it's the point. It's saying, if you don't see your space, go to your community and they will provide. If you are willing to create a space for black lesbians, the black lesbians will always be there for you. And that's what this movie is coming back to, is saying, if you don't see something, create it and go to your community. Don't try to go outside of it. They're not going to understand it or give a fuck about it the way you do. And I thought, I mean, there's a twist at the end that I was not expecting, and it really hit me. I'm not going to ruin it.
Creating your own.
I'm not going to ruin the twist, but, like, the whole movie comes back to, like, creating your own and doing it on your own. And if you don't see something, go create it. Go make it. Fuck it. And that's who we are. Like, I've never felt so fucking seen. And I was like, what? Yes. Like, lesbians only feel comfortable around other lesbians or queer femmes, honestly. I feel safe around other queer femmes. I don't, you know, queer mass people, not so much. But, like, queer femme folk, I feel safe around them. Like, anyone who identifies as femme, you know, anyone who identifies as a woman, like, I feel safe around you. Like, but, and that's what this movie is doing. It's just saying, like, create your own. If it's not there, and it's not going to be there unless you make it. And that's her whole fucking thing. And we owe Cheryl Dunye, like, so much. We just don't talk about her enough. And she's not gotten as many chances other than Ava DuVernay. Like, she's been able to direct episodes of Queen Sugar. Because Ava DuVernay's, like, the realest bitch on earth, right?
For realsies.
We owe Ava everything, too. She has a feature coming called Black is Blue. I hope she gets funding for it. If not, like, she needs to just put something out there and get us to watch it for her. But, I mean, there's no space in this movie that she felt safe in other than her own. And she created that herself. And you can tell by the people in this film, no matter where she went, they were like, well, I don't know. You're still black. You know, you're still a black woman. You're still a black queer woman. Like, those two things, they hit so hard and so deep. And I can't, dude. It was insane. And I give this movie like 5-6 bandulces because of what it means to me and what we do every day on this podcast. So, like, I don't know, dude. What did you think about it? You saw it too.
I loved it. I thought it was really, really good. I like the parallel between her, like, discovering certain things about the Watermelon Woman and then, like, her research shifts in a way that kind of reflects how she also shifts in her life. So, like, changes in her research also reflect changes in her life, which is really cool. Which is, I don't think this is much of a spoiler, but it would basically means defocusing the white people.
Yeah,
which is actually super awesome. And I think it was a great project for Guinevere Turner, like, as a follow-up to Go Fish, because in Go Fish she's the focus. But, like I mentioned about Max and Go Fish, like, doesn't have a whole lot of things going on, right? It's just, like, a lesbian living her life. And then the second movie, it's like, okay, she's in there for a bit. But then we're like, it's not about her, you know? It's about a black woman.
It's about the growth of a black woman and her need to not center or be near whiteness and to only, like, to accept her own blackness. And I was like... bitch. And the way the story progresses, I loved how it ended and how it was. It's the best movie y'all haven't seen, honestly. And if you're, like, obsessed with representation like we are, if you're obsessed about what that actually means and what that does to human beings when they're searching for something, they're hungry for something, watch Watermelon Woman. It's exactly what I thought it was, though. Like, 10 years ago, I've been trying to watch this movie. I've been obsessed, like, until I recently found it on the internet to rent. You should rent it, guys. Give your money to Cheryl Dunye all the time.
Wait, did you rent it on Amazon Prime?
I did.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's where I watched it, and I was wondering why it was just so readily available.
I thought I told you I had rented it. Because I always never finish it, so I can always come back and it gives you 30 days, right? Like, you can watch it multiple times. As long as you don't finish it, you know? But yeah, y'all should watch it. Y'all should support Cheryl Dunye. I hope she releases things. Y'all should follow her on Twitter. I started to. She's a bad bitch. I don't know if she would like those pronouns, so I'm not going to call them that anymore. Just shout out Cheryl Dunye. You're the best. I mean, sure. Think of her influence. Like, a black butch being centered. When does that happen other than, like, Pariah? And, like, Lena Waithe is starting to come to the forefront. How many years has that taken? And she's like the OG, the godfather of this shit, you know? Like, it means so much, and it meant so much to me. I don't know, dude, I'm gonna keep talking. Yeah, stop me.
no, for sure. I love this movie. No cuffs for that movie either. They're both really good. They're both, if you watch them back to back, I think I would actually recommend that. I think that they go really great together, and they have a very similar style, so you'll be already, like, in the groove. No adjustment period necessary. So, yeah, I'm glad we finally covered them.
Yeah, yeah. So, hopefully, maybe, like, 50 years, we'll see, like, Isabella Gomez getting an Oscar for something, you know? Like, for Princess Diaries 18, I don't know.
Oh, God, maybe.
I don't know. I just, all you right. know, shout out to the You know, people throw shade at Gina, but I don't throw as much shade, you know, like, it's hard out here being wrong, you know, it's hard out here being wrong all the time, and I'm sure she don't do that shit on purpose, so, and she's really puts people on, so I'm not gonna hate on Gina like that. She does a lot that y'all don't give her credit for, like, she puts people on, she's an advocate for, like, a lot of people. Her thing is, maybe she should just read a few history books before she talks, you know, and, like, maybe she shouldn't pander to audiences so much, because, like, you're gonna get, like, corrected. You're gonna learn in public, and that shit's painful. Wouldn't you rather just learn in private with your homies? Like, you ain't gotta learn that publicly all the time. Just
zoop. Why did Gina come up? I'm confused.
Because she's problematic, and I want her to stop, because she's actually, like, puts people on.
Like, in the context.
In the context of, like, representation, she actually puts people on, which is a real thing that no one gives her credit for. People just hate on her for being her, and I get that, but she puts people on. She centers things, she sells things, and give her credit where credit's due. You know, she does put people on that deserve to be put on. You know, writers. Fucking, we've met those writers, so it's like,
yeah,
we know what she does in the background. So y'all hate her on her a lot. Yes, she needs to read more books, but she does real things, guys. There's actually someone out there saying something, period, which you're not, and you're not working on, not you specifically, because you actually are working on that, but other folk, y'all can shush, create some shit, and then you'll figure out how hard it is. So
hard as balls.
Yeah, go give Mytha some money so y'all don't have to worry about that shit.
But yeah, so I guess a few closing things. We do have a little bit of an announcement. I don't think it's that big of a deal or anything, but this is, like I said, this podcast is a lot of work, and it's not gonna get easier, I don't think, for a while. So as you know, right now we do 3 weeks on, 1 week off. So we release three episodes in a row, one per week on Thursdays. On the fourth week, we release on Patreon. And basically, to those of you who are not Patreon supporters, that's kind of like a week that we don't release. So we're going to just basically take away an episode a month and make it every other week for those of you who are not on Patreon. And if you are on our Patreon, you're really only going to have 1 week without us releasing an episode, but that 1 week is going to help us a lot. So, and that's just until the end of the year, most likely. So, yeah, don't be surprised if it's a Thursday and there was an episode last week and there's not an episode this week. So,
yeah, it's just going to be one episode for people who are Patreon supporters every month that we're not going to do one.
Yeah. And for those of you who aren't, I mean, you're used to having one episode not come out every few weeks anyway, so I think it'll be okay. But you're going to hear a lot more interviews that we did here in LA a little while back, and you're going to get So Fat, So Brave Part 2 with Fabi and Emma. So that's going to come out, and there's going to be still a lot of exciting things. Of course, we're going to do Halloween episodes, and we're not going to, like, overload the timeline with just interviews.
Yeah,
well, and of course, Patreon supporters, you have very little to worry about. We've got you covered for all of you that are on there, all 21 of you, I think it is now. You guys are the best.
Damn. Okay, yeah. Love y'all, like, for real though.
So yeah, just, you know, a heads up, and thanks for supporting. And of course, we have our Teespring up, so you guys can get shirts. We have Goncha shirts, we have regular shirts, we have cafecito shirts, and
coffee mugs, sweaters.
Yeah, coffee mugs.
The winter is coming. Okay, y'all, get y'all sweaters. Stay warm.
I finally ordered a shirt, which I'm excited. I think I'm gonna get it this week.
Proud of you. I got my little cousin one in Mexico because she stayed in school. Staying in school, kids. All you kids struggling with a semester, y'all can do it. We believe in you, all the students. You in school right now. You got this. You're probably smarter than all of us combined. Just keep going. Anyways.
Yeah. Stay in school or whatever.
That was my PSA, kids. Stay in school. Buy our merch. But yeah. Yes.
Yeah. So thanks for listening to another episode. The every other week thing is going to start in October. So I think you still have, like, a full month schedule this month. And look forward to that. There's some good shit coming.
Good shit coming, guys. If you guys have any recommendations, if y'all love us, for real, leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. I was reading them today and I was like genuinely touched. And I was like, oh shit, like my day sucked balls. I worked like 10 and a half hours today straight, no break, like no lunch. Y'all really got me through that. Y'all gonna get me through it, because when I'm depressed, which is every day, I'm gonna go back and read all them reviews and remember why I'm doing this, because your girl is stressed out and broke. So I appreciate the support and the loving words. Y'all really say really, really go far. Like, I'm not playing. Like, depression is hard, y'all. So every now and then I get like a really good just like, oh, okay. Like, I don't suck that much. It's okay. So yes. Shout out to y'all.
The reviews are free and they help us like so much, so much. As well as our Patreon supporters supporting us every month, that helps pay the bills. And helps us create cooler episodes with cool interviews with cool people. So
Patreon people, if you're ever supporting. In town, I will bake for you. I saw Jake recently from Juice with Jake and Jake. What an icon.
Yes.
What a legend. Met
him finally.
You gotta meet him too, right?
Yes. He's so sweet.
Sweet, sweet man. And then Rossi, of course, we love you always. Best. I've added him to my concert group chat. He's gonna come with me everywhere now. But yeah,
for sure. So follow us on social media, CYC Podcast on Instagram and Twitter. I'll link it in the description below if you guys need that. My personal is MYTE Panda on Insta and Twitter.
Mine is at Fried Babita on Twitter and Cabrona with a CH, I don't know, on Instagram. Come follow your girls on CYC Podcast on Instagram, and y'all merch be blessed.
Merch. Yes, and merch is at teespring.com /CYC podcast, and then CYC pod, and then CYC 2, like separate thing. Just go to our link on the Instagram bio, and our Patreon is patreon.com/CYC podcast.
Yes, all of those words. Y'all be blessed. Y'all be good. Happy Thursday, y'all.
Bye, guys.